Call today's meeting of the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas to order. Today is February 26, 1998. This meeting is called to order at 10:04. Morning, those assembled and on the teleconference network system. For the record, the Oil and Gas Committee members present are Representative Bundy, Representative Ryan, Representative Kemplin, and then myself, Representative Hodgins. On teleconference day, we're connected with the LIOs in Anchorage and in Kenai. And then we have an off-net from Houston, Texas. On today's calendar, we'll hear testimony on House Bill 380. That would be the reduction of royalties on cooking oil and gas. And then at 11 a.m., we will move on to House Bill 393, the gas line bill, and take testimony and discussion regarding that bill. My legislative aide is Pat Carter. Mr. Carter, would you like to begin testimony on House Bill 380?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat Carter. I'm a legislative assistant to Representative Mark Hodgins. Begin by describing the intent of House Bill 380. The intent is to encourage the development of uneconomic oil and gas reserves in the Cook Inlet region. In addition to stimulating development of several known undeveloped fields, most of which were discovered more than 30 years ago, House Bill 380 has the potential to leverage additional exploration and development in the vicinity of new infrastructure required to develop those known fields. Any new oil and gas production resulting from the development of these fields will in turn reduce the average cost of producing existing reserves and extend the economic life of both existing and new Cook Inlet production and transportation infrastructure. Leaseholders with leases overlying previously discovered oil and gas fields, which have remained undeveloped, and from at least January 1st of 1998 through December 31st of 1997, would have an incentive to develop those fields as rapidly as possible. Oil and gas from these fields brought into production before January 1st, 2004 would pay a reduced royalty of 5% instead of the normal rate of 12.5%. This royalty holiday would last for a period of 10 years from the date which production begins. In order to qualify for the royalty reduction, leaseholders would have to act almost immediately in order to bring these fields into production by the end of the year 2003. By limiting the royalty holiday for the qualifying fields to a 10-year period, House Bill 80 provides for a reasonable limit that the state's foregone royalties in exchange for oil and gas production that may otherwise not occur. The state's royalties from currently producing Cook Inlet oil and gas fields will not be affected by this legislation. By encouraging the development of existing uneconomic oil and gas fields, House Bill 380 will benefit the state and local economies through taxation and royalties, as well as encouraging future development of new oil and gas discoveries by lowering the cost of infrastructure, as well as providing jobs for Alaskans. Some of these reserves were discovered more than 30 years ago, and this legislation allows us to provide a reasonable incentive to develop those reserves so that all of us may realize a benefit. As they say, 5% of something is better than 12.5% of nothing. That's my testimony.
Thank you. Are there any questions of a sponsor's aide from any members of the committee? Representative Roepberg, I would like to also note that Representative Roepberg is joining us. Please.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carter, did you happen to take the time to review the testimony and the minutes of House Bill 207 from the 19th legislature?
No, I have not.
Thank you.
I'm familiar with the bill, but I'm not. I did
you
not.
Might, Mr. Chairman, you might want to spend the time doing that. It might be very illuminating because it speaks to much the same issues.
In fact, we'll probably have some testimony as we go along as to the differences between 207 and House Bill 380.
Right.
Any other questions? With that, I would like to maybe get some participation in the conference network. Is Kenai on? Do we have Kenai on the network? Is Anchorage on the network? Why don't we go ahead and...
Wait a minute.
Are C9 anchors on the network?
They are.
They're
I've
not responding.
Can you hear us there in Anchorage?
Yes, we have Anchorage. Do we have Kenai? We'll start with Anchorage then.
Can you see if you can get a...
In Anchorage, we have a John Meese, is that correct?
Meese.
Please give me a summary of your testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Hodgins, members of the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas. My name is John Meese, and I'm here today representing Marathon Oil Company. As most of you know, Marathon has been an operator in Cook Inlet for over 30 years, and we appreciate your support and interest of the oil and the gas industry in the Cook Inlet area. I'd like to take a few moments to comment on House Bill 380, which, as you know, is intended to provide an incentive for oil and gas development in Cook Inlet from fields that have previously been undeveloped or shut in. Marathon supports House Bill 380 and believes that in the long run, this incentive will have a positive economic impact on the state of Alaska and local communities. I'd like to point out, however, that we believe this bill would have a more immediate impact on undeveloped or shut-in oil fields because of the readily available market for this product. The ultimate incentive for adding additional reserve capacity, whether it be oil or natural gas, is the availability of ready and stable markets. While such a market is certainly available for new oil reserves in the Cook Inlet area, the same cannot be said for natural gas. New markets for uncommitted natural gas reserves are not available for the next several years, making it difficult to economically justify near-term drilling expenditures. Although this bill will provide some economic benefit to the industry, we don't believe by itself will be enough to stimulate significant activity for natural gas development, at least in the near future. I would like now to ask the committee to consider points of clarification that we believe are needed in House Bill 380. It is our understanding that the intent of this legislation is to provide the temporary relief to fields that have been undeveloped or shut in. We would like clarification on the definition of undeveloped. Specifically, we would like to know if a field that has produced periodically over the last few years but requires additional drilling to fully develop the field will be eligible for temporary royalty relief. Also, we would like to clarify that royalty relief would apply to either a reentry of an existing well or a new well needed to recover undeveloped reserves. Again, we understand the intent of the proposed legislation is to address these scenarios, but we would appreciate the department's review to make sure that the language is explicit. In closing, many of the oil and gas producing states enacted similar incentives for oil and gas development in the early 1990s. These states have found the programs to be beneficial to all stakeholders involved and have maintained those programs. We believe incentive programs such as House Bill 380 will also lead to economic gain for our communities and the state, but we recognize that market availability is probably the overriding incentive for our industry to look for new oil and gas reserves. Therefore, we believe you'll see more immediate impact on the undeveloped oil fields in the Cook Inlet area as a result of this proposed incentive. Thank you for the opportunity to share these comments with you today, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Meese. We do have a question from Representative Ryan. Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Meese. We this summer I was presented with the presentation was made, I should say, from Dick Barnes from NSTAR, showing the reduction in the amount of gas coming out of Cook Inlet, and by I think it was 2003 or 2004, it was supposed to be down below a level that would support the existing customer base in the Anchorage Bowl area. How does that, was that information correct? I've noticed in your testimony you're talking about new markets for uncommitted natural gas reserves, but would this further exploration not perhaps fill that hole that NSTAR was talking about?
Well, we think that certainly at some point in time in the future that additional reserves will be needed to make deliverabilities in the local markets. But that isn't out there for quite a ways. We do believe that that there will be additional markets because NSTAR doesn't have their markets committed past about, well, they start declining after about 2003 or 4. So at some point in time, there will be a need to look for natural gas in the inlet. We just have a hard time economically justifying spending millions of dollars today for a product that we can't sell to a new market until 2004 and beyond.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meese.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Representative Roquefort.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meese, I know you're new to Marathon up here, but you reviewed the history of Marathon's activities in the last couple of years, and did Marathon consider any application under House Bill 207 or 180J in the last couple of years, and if so, why not? And is that because of the nature of your product mix now, or your asset mix of gas versus oil?
That's correct. As you know, we sold our oil reserves, and I think that House Bill 207 would probably have a more immediate effect on oil production. Again, it's a matter of markets. Our market, our gas is committed. All of our gas is committed to long-term markets right now, and even under House Bill 207, it would still be the same as this. So we'd still have to spend money today and wouldn't be able to sell that product for a number of years down the road.
Further follow-up, Representative Roquefort?
No, it's fine.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of Mr. Meese? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony, Mr.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's. Before I go to Kenai, I do want to mention that this is a companion bill to a bill that's in the Senate, and we will be allowed to change and massage this, and there are some areas in this bill that I think we will need to address. It would be my intention not to move the bill today, but to take testimony and then go ahead and look at some of the things we want to do and possibly move it next week if that's the will of the committee. With that, I would go to Kenai, if Kenai is on.
We're on.
Good. And is Catherine Thomas there, please?
Speaking.
You would begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Chairman Hodgins, members of the committee. I apologize for being unable to remain in Juneau to appear before you today and provide this testimony. And I appreciate the opportunity Chairman Hodgins has made to allow me to testify this morning and still speak with this committee. I'm the owner of a construction service company located on the Kenai Peninsula, and I've served on the board of the North Peninsula Chamber of Commerce, the Alaska Trucking Association, the Alaska Industry Support Alliance, and am the immediate past chairman of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And I share this with you because I wanted to let you know that in all the years I've participated in these organizations, we spend a considerable amount of our time and effort trying to keep a viable economy and provide jobs for our employees. For many years, the oil and gas reserves in the Cook Inlet Basin have been in decline. The results of this decline has also been the loss of many good-paying jobs that the oil and gas industry has traditionally provided to the Kenai Peninsula economy. Local communities have made many efforts to replace these jobs with work in other fields of industry and resource development. But at this time, jobs in the development of oil and gas are still our highest paying. Providing our industry-paid families with a higher standard of living than other local jobs can contribute. On the Kenai Peninsula, we've actively sought ways to revitalize what has been perceived as an old oil field. For many years, industry has declined to invest development dollars in many Cook Inlet discoveries, citing the rate of return on investment of capital dollars as a contributing factor to this decision. House Bill 308 provides an opportunity for us to attract these dollars, providing an incentive for companies to make the infrastructure investments in projects in our area. The Kenai Chamber of Commerce and the North Peninsula Chamber of Commerce are actively looking at this bill and moving it through their own legislative support process. Although it's not my place to speak for either body, I believe that you'll receive favorable support of this bill. The question raised today regarding royalty eligibility of royalty relief for fields that require additional drilling to fully develop the field, or if it would apply to reentry of an existing well, or if a new well that may be needed to recover developed reserves may be worthy of consideration, at this time. I'm not totally familiar with the concept, so I'm not prepared to comment on it. We think that House Bill 308 will provide a lot of incentive for us to develop, to... I'm sorry, I can't read my own writing again. Will provide some incentive for us to attract investment dollars and provide jobs for our community. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to share the comments with the committee today. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Would there be any questions of the committee of Catherine Thomas concerning House Bill 380? Seeing none, thank you very much, Ms. Thomas. Do we have a Bill Joyce in Kenai also?
Mr. Joyce does not wish to testify at this point in time.
Okay, maybe we'll come back to him. Mr. Bill Hutto?
Good morning, Chairman Hopkins and members of the committee. I'm Bill Hutto, the operations manager of GasPro Alaska, a Kenai-based company. I've had a few years of experience in the Cook Inlet oil and gas fields. I've also seen many opportunities in the industry that have not been developed because the incentive for making a substantial investment has not been presented. After drilling and with development, our project will have the potential of providing the base for distribution of gas to areas on the southern end of the Kenai Peninsula, an area never provided service before. This potential for low-cost energy is of interest to all Kenai Peninsula residents. These two House bills provide an opportunity for our company to attract the development dollars necessary to see that our gas can reach a market. By having the ability to use the proposed incentive in the bill, our project becomes more viable. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Hutto. Do we have any questions of the committee on that testimony? I'd like to note for the record that Representative Bryce has joined us and Representative Hogan. We'll go into, is there anybody further in Kenai to testify?
No, Mr. Chair, we have no one further. Thank you.
Thank you. We would move on to Anchorage again. Kevin Tabor. I think they have his name misspelled on my list here. Kevin Tabor, are you there? How about Mike Macy in Anchorage? Is Anchorage off?
Can you hear me now, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
There's Kevin.
Yeah.
You'd identify yourself and start your testimony, sir.
Certainly will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Special Oil and House, our Oil and Gas Committee. My name is Kevin Tabler. I'm Manager of Land and Government Affairs for Union Oil Company of California here in Alaska. Appreciate this opportunity to be heard today and to comment on House Bill 380 and future development of Kokelet oil and gas reserves for South Central Alaska. First, let me begin by saying that UNICAL supports legislation creating incentives for the exploration and development of the state's natural resources. UNICAL has been an active proponent of incentive legislation, specifically as it may apply to the Cook Inlet area. Since Cook Inlet is UNICAL's primary area of focus, we are encouraged that responsible incentives are being discussed, which will increase activity and possibly stimulate the development of several known undeveloped and shut-in fields, some of which were discovered over 30 years ago. Early exploration success in Cook Inlet identified several oil and gas accumulations, which were deemed uneconomic by the then current market conditions. Development of these reserves were impacted as much by market conditions as they were by a lack of a readily available infrastructure. Today's declining Cook Inlet reserve base has created the need for discovery of new reserves and the development of known accumulations. Development will require expansion and utilization of the existing infrastructure and taking advantage of economies of scale. The time is right to access these existing accumulations, but access alone will not make these reserves economically viable. The Cook Inlet, with its mature and declining fields, low margin properties, high operating costs, and regulatory uncertainty, creates a challenging environment in which to stay profitable. UNICAL's considerable stake in its infrastructure, manpower, and capital investments are continually threatened by global competition for investment dollars, low oil prices, and an uncertain and changing regulatory climate. Additionally, product price plays a key role in field development, but in undeveloped or shut-in fields, which are marginally economic, product price and other uncontrollable conditions limit development opportunities unless adequately offset by some other factor. A very clear, certain, and easily administered way to reduce startup costs of undeveloped fields and improve their overall economic viability is to reduce the royalty burden. This factor alone is controllable, creates certainty, and reduces risk, thus leading to a higher probability that a company will utilize this incentive to access these known accumulations. We need to create a more favorable climate to eliminate uncertainty. We need to take action to reduce economic risk. Otherwise, investment capital, which is extremely sensitive to field life and product price, will be hard to come by when competing on a global market. Cook Inlet, economy of scale, financial incentives to expend capital, and simple supply and demand economics will be determining factors in whether or not development of known accumulations in Cook Inlet will occur. As we deplete our existing Cook Inlet producing fields, incentives such as House Bill 380 will become critical if we are ever to access these known yet unproduced fields. In conclusion, UNICAL supports the adoption of this legislation as it will enhance and prolong the economic viability of resource development in Cook Inlet, provide employment for South Central Alaska, and extend the life of the existing Cook Inlet infrastructure. And with that, I conclude and be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Tabler. Are there any questions of the committee? Representative Roquefort.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kevin, to my knowledge, UNICAL has been the only company to apply for a royalty of modification under House Bill 207-180J, and could you very briefly describe to the committee any problems you faced with that legislation and why this particular bill might be easier to implement?
I'd be happy to, Representative Roper. Very, very succinctly, there are so many uncontrollable factors that have to be taken into account under House Bill 207, whereas this bill would have one factor, which is purely royalty reduction, royalty, which is a controllable factor. House Bill 207, you know, for the new field development, the recoupment language was very clear. But for marginal fields, the bill is more subjective and requires a negotiation and also a determination that it's in the state's best interest. The commissioner, you know, prior to 207, had the authority to adjust royalties. 207 sought to help adjust royalty for economic relief on these marginal fields, at least as they applied to Cook Inlet. The commissioner has a mandate to protect the state's interests, and this can be in direct conflict with the analysis a company goes through in making an investment decision. The the process can be a very lengthy process. The portfolio of prospects that would have that we would have applied for, that we did apply for, would have actually destroyed value. There's a requirement in the request that the companies provide a full economic and technical proposal. Companies spend a lot of technical time and manpower on low-margin properties. And then really, as long as there was a positive NPV or net present value on any of these projects that we proposed, the state was not inclined to grant royalty relief under 207. So I think a very clear, clean, easily administered approach might be one that has more utility, at least for the marginally producing fields in Cook Inlet today.
Thank you, Mr. Tabler. Do you have further questions, Mr. Roper? Representative Roper?
Just one follow-up, Mr. Chairman, I can think of right now. Mr. Tabler, under 207, you could have started in the, it was certainly the House intention to start at a much lower rate than 5% if you could justify that than it's called for in 380. It had a cap of, or a floor, excuse me, in the final Senate version of 3%, and the House version started with a 90% or 10% floor. But then it did take into account the fact that if you found that the field would be further delineated and had a greater level of profitability, that there would be a provision for a sliding scale. There's nothing in this bill before us that provides for any circuit breaker or sliding scale in case the amount of recoverable oil in the horizon might prove to be greater than was first thought. Although, as I recall now, I think 207 required that the field be as fully delineated as possible. But, I mean, is your testimony that the requirements under 207 are too burdensome economically to make the case, and that you would prefer to see a more straightforward, simpler calculation? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. In fact, the sliding scale discussion, as I recall and remember, mostly was centered around the new field development, like the Badami that was being discussed at the time, because the bill 207 does address two different aspects, those fields that have yet to be produced and those fields that are produced. But in order to make a clear and convincing showing, which is required under the bill, that royalty relief is required, an owner must show that the present operations or planned investments will clearly destroy value. And so as a result, royalty relief is likely to be granted only to those companies which expend a considerable resources on unattractive projects, and those that are willing to participate in risk and who are willing to refund all or a portion of the rewards that would be gained. So for a lot of these projects in Cook Inlet, these are very low margin properties. They are very higher risk. We've already drilled the lower risk portions of them, so they're higher risk, and the rate of return that we would hope to expect are lower than other investment opportunities we'd have elsewhere. So you end up with a discussion on what is a reasonable rate of return for having to do this negotiation, as opposed to a straightforward royalty reduction. There is no question. You get the reduction. You go forward or you don't.
And for concluding,
Ruffberg, a follow up, please.
Yeah, Mr. Tabler, UNICAL recently announced that they're going to look at development of coal bed methane fields even below 3,000 feet in the Mat Valley because of the need for feedstock for your plant in Nikiski. Therefore, apparently you have a need for the gas element. What's your opinion on the relief for gas, the gas portion that's called for in this bill?
We believe clearly that there's a need for more gas in Cook Inlet. I would differ from the testimony earlier heard by representing from Marathon, in that we believe that there is, we are heading for a gas shortage. Their market conditions will definitely control whether or not the price, and the price is another factor. But UNICAL is an in-state manufacturer and is looking for more reserves for its plant. And to the extent that the community at large utility market, as you mentioned, it was mentioned at NSTAR, feels threatened, then it's of concern to us as well. So I think it's safe to say that nobody in Anchorage or South Central Alaska is going to go cold before we stop manufacturing either fertilizer or shipping out LNG. So yes, there is a need for gas, and we are actively out exploring. That is one of the reasons for coal bed methane. As evidenced in the last sale, we were the highest, with our partner, Force Energy, acquired the largest number of leases in that sale. So yes, there is a need to go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Tabler. Representative Kemplin, you had a question, Mr. Tabler.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Tabler, one of the aspects of this piece of legislation is that it has a time horizon of 10 years from the date that oil or gas production commences from a particular field. It's been my experience that over the past 10 years, the price of oil and gas has fluctuated, sometimes fairly significantly. During periods of high prices for oil or gas, wouldn't it be appropriate for the state to reap its normal 12.5% royalty? And shouldn't the proposed legislation have language to make that adjustment during periods of high prices?
Actually, I would disagree somewhat with that statement, in that your investment decisions are made at the time of and they're based on market conditions at that time. I think your comment is more directed towards, shouldn't the state be kept whole if conditions change and the price goes up? Well, the decision to make the investment was made back, and the drilling was done back when there was a certain price and there's a certain expectation. For marginal, for old, for the fields, these mature fields, they're low margin properties to begin with, and the expectation that there's going to be a huge windfall, I think, is not very high. Now, as far as the putting these fields on that have been discovered yet are not being produced, that are shut in, they were shut in for a reason. That was economic conditions. So I think as an incentive, if this is an incentive piece of legislation, it's going to require that sort of incentive for people to spend those dollars on those undeveloped fields.
Thank you, Mr. Tabler. It will be the intention of this of the chairman to have limits placed on the amount of oil and the amount of gas that this royalty reduction will affect, meaning that if they get to a larger field, we will identify a limit that the royalty reduction will no longer occur. With that, we have no further questions of Mr. Tabler. I would like to invite Mike Macy to give a summary of your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I am not going to be testifying this morning. Sorry, that was just a mistake in signing in.
Well, thank you for joining us. Anybody else in Kenai available for testimony?
No.
Anybody else available in Anchorage for testimony? With that, I will go to testimony on the sign-in sheet from people present. We have
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bundy.
You have Mr. Micey on the teleconference. Would it be possible to ask him a question?
Mr. Micey, are you still available in Anchorage?
Yes, I am.
Representative Bundy would like to pose a question to you.
Regarding the written testimony that we have, there's a statement that while this bill will provide some economic benefit for the industry, it won't be enough to stimulate significant activity in the near future. What changes would have to be made, and how would you define significant?
Well, I'm talking basically from the natural gas side, if you're the rest of that sentence. Oil side, because you can sell the product tomorrow if you find it, I think that it provides good incentive for that. Our problem is that we can't, because of our gas is committed for the next several years out, we don't need to find any new gas right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I stated before, we'd be spending a lot of money now and wouldn't be seeing any return on that investment for several years out. And when we compare those economics to other things that we do around the world, it's in trouble. I mean, we just can't, it's hard for us to secure the money here when we compete with other projects Marathon has around the world because of the lower rate of return.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bundy. Representative Rookberg, do you have an additional question, Mr. Meese?
Yeah, Mr. Meese, according to my information, the Nicolai Creek field is 50% Unocal, 50% Marathon. If this bill were to go in effect, would you be more apt to lift that gas from Nicolai Creek than you would be otherwise? Or then wouldn't it replace 12.5% royalty gas if you did?
Well, I think that, you know, of course, with Unocal has different needs than ours. They're trying to fill their needs for their plant, and as a 50% partner, they may see more value on this than we do, and we'd have to decide whether or not we want to participate. But we're still faced with the same problem, is that we don't have any place to sell new gas reserves. Just displaces what we already have, although the royalty would be less, and we would consider that. I think that it would perhaps be enough incentive for us to look at that with Unocal and participating and trying to do something there.
Further follow-up, Representative Rookberg? Representative Kemplin, you have a question, Mr. Meese?
Yes, I did. NSTAR came and it made a presentation that they were concerned about the supply of natural gas here and within the next few years. And in your statement here, you talk about new markets for uncommitted natural gas reserves are not available for the next several years. When would, how do those statements correlate there? When would it be appropriate, from your perspective, for your industry to begin drilling for natural gas reserves in order to meet the projected demand by NSTAR?
Probably towards the end of that time frame of this bill, after the year 2000, towards the time that they're going to need, that they have uncommitted or need for reserves that they don't have committed at this point in time, starts in the 2003-04 time frame. It would help our economics, and we would be more apt to do something in the 2002-03 time frame as far as spending money on gas for those needs. So, yes, they do indeed have uncommitted gas needs out beyond that, but we think that there is going to be sufficient gas to be found through developments, oil fields, and new discoveries to fill those needs in the future.
Any follow-up questions, Representative Kemplin?
So, from what I understand, you just need about a year's lead time in order to do the drilling, is that correct, in order to meet their demand?
Depends on where the drilling is located, how close it is to the infrastructure. If it's near fields where we can hook up the production fairly quickly, then a year or 2 years' time is sufficient. May need longer than that if it's away from infrastructure.
Thank you, Mr. Meese. Having nobody else on the teleconference list, I would invite Gary Carlson to come forward and offer some testimony. You'd identify yourself, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Special Committee on Oil and Gas. For the record, my name is Gary Carlson, Vice President of Force Energy. I have submitted prepared testimony for the record and for your review, but I would like to summarize that testimony here today. We tell you a little bit about Force Energy. We're fairly new to the state. We're an independent oil company that set up an office in Alaska roughly a year ago, started investing money in Alaska about 15 months ago. When we opened that office, we opened it with 7 employees. We now have 22 employees. 18 were Alaskan residents. 3 were reruns like myself that had lived in Alaska before, and 1 was from out of state. We make liberal use of local contractors and consultants to supplement our needs for projects that we're looking at. Force Energy was very successful in the Gulf of Mexico, looking for taking a strong technical approach to picking up marginal fields that were out of the focus of major oil companies. The Cook Inlet fell into that category, and that was a strategy fit with Force Energy. And the Cook Inlet has seen a defocusing by the majors. We feel that there is some marginal opportunities for investment up here, and that is the niche that we hope to fill here in Alaska. In that roughly 15-month time frame, we've committed $180 million to the state of Alaska, or to our operations up here, through acquisitions, seismic work, and now drilling. So we're serious investors in Alaska, and we support House Bill 380. We think it provides the types of incentives that are needed to develop marginal fields. Similar concepts have worked elsewhere. I personally watched them when you put a clock on the industry and you give them incentive to invest money at give them incentives to take advantage of an opportunity. It happens. It's happened in foreign countries. It's happened here in the United States in the coal bed methane time frame for tax relief in the lower 48. Any success will add infrastructure that will add value to other fields. A good example is the recent Phillips discovery. We think that'll possibly add value in fields that are somewhat removed, the Granite Point fields, the MacArthur River Trading Bay will all see a longer life as a result of increased activity. We think this bill will also do that. Force Energy supports Senate Bill 256 and House Bill 380, and I would be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Before I get to questions, being that this is your first official visit to the Oil and Gas Committee, I'd certainly like to thank you for your very aggressive stance and the way that you conducted yourself in local hire and local purchase in Cook Inlet. And we're very, very appreciative of that.
Okay.
With that, I would open up for questions. Representative Roper.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I want to echo your sentiments there, and really, I think in the last 3 years, I've spent as much time trying to help the development in the Cook Inlet Basin, and I'm really pleased to see that Force Energy has made that commitment up here and filled that gap, and we are very pleased to have you here. Mr. Carlson, what your company's strategic planning, how much was that influenced in the Gulf of Mexico by federal royalty relief and other state royalty relief in that area? Is there any influence there?
I probably would be guessing if I answered that question. I've been with Force Energy roughly a year. I was with Unocal for 28 years prior to that. So I will say this, that my observation of their success was strictly by looking for a technical approach to increase recovery around fields that had been successfully developed by others, or to take over fields that majors had operated and had lost focus, concentrating their investments either in deeper water or overseas. So I would think it was more to do with the geologic opportunities rather than any incentives that might have been in federal waters at the time.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. You have a follow-up, Representative Roper.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carlson. Looking over the fields that might be affected by this, it appears that you have an interest in, one, the Redoubt Shoal, which would be an oil field, which is clear, but also the West Forelands, which is a gas area. The fact that you're a new player on the block, if you will, all of these are old known reserves, I mean, how much difference would this growth reduction make to your desire to, like, lift the gas, particularly in the West Foreland's field? Could you talk about that and that percentage spread and the marginality of it and what you would be able to do with or without the royalty as it relates to that particular field?
Sure, I'd be glad to comment on both fields. Our general philosophy is to look for the opportunities, invest in leases. As Mr. Tabor said, we recently invested in the lease sale with Unocal here a few days ago. Our general philosophy, again, is to obtain the opportunities and then turn around and evaluate them and either invest in them or walk away from them. And the incentives that you're talking about here could do two things. It could either encourage you to drill a well that you wouldn't drill otherwise in the marginal gas field, and the West Foreland gas field would be an example of that. Or it could encourage you, if you drilled a well, to define the size of the structure. The incentive would play into your thinking on an economic calculation, whether to proceed and put it on production, because drilling is just the first step, or 3D seismic is the first step, and the ultimate decision on whether you're going to proceed to put something on production, this incentive bill would have a definite play in that.
Sure, like a follow-up. As the chairman of the committee indicated, there's maybe a desire to have some type of a cap that relates to the quantity of recoverable reserves of a particular field. Do you think that's a doable thing, or and the fact that we have an undeveloped field here, which may require further drilling or further delineation? I mean, what would happen if you would to step out and delineate further and find a larger field that would be fully economic in any direction, or any advice to this committee how we could confront that issue?
The one field that comes to mind is the Redoubt Shoal field. We approached the state early in 97 to unitize, and we made a commitment to the state that we would run the 3D seismic program over the prospect and turn around and drill a well with time. And the concept there would be that if the confirmation drilling would relief to develop that field. If it showed 20 million barrels, royalty relief probably wouldn't matter. But there's going to be a range of, say, 40 to 55 million barrels in a field like Redoubt Shoal. I can speak to that because we've done some technical work on it. And a cap of somewhere in that range would still provide the incentive to proceed, and yet would offer the state some assurance that if it was an extremely large field, 100 million barrel, that they would recover some of the lost opportunities for the state.
Representative Roper, do you have further follow-up from Mr. Carlson?
Follow-up on that, Mr. Carlson. I think it would be very helpful for this committee if in fact, you could provide this committee with some examples and actual specificity of existing fields that might fit in this category, what the scope of the known reserves, approved reserves, and the potentiality for enhancing those, particularly with the 3D seismic and confirmation drilling, for further delineation, and at what point, given the investment in each particular field and with the infrastructure, is going to have to be a variable, I think, because you have a variation in the capital investment in each different field is going to vary, so the profitability is going to vary from field to field. I think even based on your new investment, which would be fundamentally unknown. Also, further discussions on this issue before even talked about going back to the historic investment in a particular field to give that some weight in consideration, because there are then sunk costs, and if you go and even buy out a field, that was could have been a consideration in what value you may have given for that particular field. So any further technical information like that, I think, might be real helpful to help us see if we could provide some kind of a cap, if you will, for lack of a better word, to define a circuit breaker approach or whatever approach we might adopt in protecting the state's interest here.
Thank you, sir. I'll make a real brief comment, and yes, we can try to provide you, the committee, with additional information. One of the things that is commented on earlier about the simplicity of this bill and the diversity of the people that are involved with it, we think is extremely important. And if we came up with a technical review in one field, it's going to be very difficult to move it to another. So we would encourage the committee to look at a very simple cap rather than try to estimate a cap per each field out there, because everyone would be different. We have a little more knowledge about readout shoal points to Strichkov. It may be that it would take this sort of incentive before you drilled your first well at readout shoal. We've committed to drill the first well. It's going to come into the economics of proceeding, which will basically double our investment at that point, you know, to go ahead and try to put it on production. But I can give you some order of magnitude economic background for generic oil fields, and you can expand that to what is covered under this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We have Representative Ryan Bundy and then Kemplin. Representative Ryan, you have a question, Mr. Carlson?
Well, sir, I have heard testimony today and testimony previously on 396, on the 393, whatever it is here, on the Stranded Gas Project 393, I guess, that the market is uncertain, and yet I've got a copy here from the Oil and Gas Journal this month that says in the last 7 years the landings for LNG have doubled, that by 2010 the market's projected to go 100%. 8 new ships were built last year, 34 more unordered. Nobody's going to invest the kind of money, capital money, in ships to carry LNG if that market isn't there and the forecasts for the market are there. And yet people keep coming in and keep saying, well, you know, it's kind of risky business, we're not sure. This fellow earlier talked about the Marathon, they didn't know if the market was there and so forth. And what am I to believe when I see these ocean shipping studies, Petronas orders 7 new tankers and so forth? These people aren't investing this kind of money if they're not fairly darn sure that they're going to realize a gain on it and that the market is going to be there. And I'd like to clear up this uncertainty about a gas market not being there, because I get testimony here and then I read these articles in professional journals and they say exactly opposite the testimony. What can you enlighten me on in that respect?
Well, from the LNG standpoint, I think the reason that you saw substantial investments in LNG and the drilling associated with that was the marketplace was driving the investment primarily Japan, Korea, and Taiwan were signing upwards of 30-year contracts at attractive prices, that you could go and build an LNG plant in Indonesia, or expand one in Malaysia, or build a new one in Australia. So I think it was market-driven. There's knowledge of gas reserves throughout Southeast Asia, in the Middle East, with the making the substantial investment it would take to bring them to market is on a totally different scale than what Marathon was talking about, but is something that builds into the economics and the negotiations with the host countries that are going to be bringing that in. So typically they would expand an LNG train in Indonesia when they need to start delivering more gas to Korea two years later. So it's a lot easier to plan on a global scale, and outside of the United States, it's a tendency to sign much longer contracts. So
just more follow-up. Ryan, you have a follow-up, please.
Yeah. Marathon last year, the woman came into my office and talked about their Japanese market and how they had done for a long time. Do they ship just gas, or do they ship LNG? I'm not really familiar with what Marathon's Alaska project does. I know they have a big market in Japan. What product are they selling?
They're selling LNG, liquefied natural gas, along with their partner Phillips. And I'm not familiar with all the contract details of Marathon, but I do know that they are applying for an extension, which in the United States they have to get an extension from the Department of Energy, where other parts of the world it's more of a free market arrangement. And I think that's what, if Misi's still on the line, he could probably address that question better than I could.
With the indulgence of the committee, I would like to continue on with House Bill 380. I'd said earlier that we would stop at 11. We do have some other folks to visit here, testimony. With that, Representative Bundy, you had a question of Mr. Carlson.
Yeah, thank you. Earlier testimony indicated that wasn't likely that this bill would impact gas production, but that it would impact oil production. You have both gas and oil interests. I think of particular interest to Anchorage is expanding gas production. Do you visualize using this bill, if it were to come to pass, as expanding your gas production as well as oil production?
Yes, sir. We will look at both oil and gas. We feel that we don't have the infrastructure that Marathon enjoys and fixed market that they enjoy. Our intention would be to evaluate all the prospects that we have as quickly as possible and invest in, once you start major investments in these projects, you need to follow up or walk away from them. You destroy value by delaying too much time between your major investment and your first income flow. We would hope that on the gas prospects that we're drilling that we would be able to negotiate contracts. Granted, they would probably be small compared to the volumes that Marathon and Unocal are talking about in Phillips. But we're assuming that we will be able to market some gas, so we're going to look for gas at the same time we're looking for oil. And I would think that this incentive would help clarify the gas situation more than anything else in the Cook Inlet.
Further questions, Representative Bundy?
And some mechanical questions here, as was indicated earlier. We have lots of curiosity. Well, the good news about this job is we get to ask lots of questions. Bad news, we have to come up with answers. On the 10-year window here, is it correct to assume that gas production is much like oil production? It's front-loaded in that you recover more in the first 10 years than you would in the second 10 years, and well, the Cook Inlet field has been going on for a long time. What kind of life expectancy would you plan for out of any new fields?
Well, an oil field, I think, that obviously we're at the latter stage of oil development in the inlet, and it's roughly 30 years. I don't think you would plan a new development that would take 30 years to deplete. You would make your investments to try to compact that a little bit. Gas would really depend on your contracts, and I think it's possible that you would end up with a flatter decline for gas if you had a sufficient amount of gas, and the marketplace would just allow you to bring, say, 20 million feet a day into the marketplace. And you would probably invest with that in mind, that you would drill more wells to get it started, and then you would hold off and drill wells for deliverability later in the life. Most of your oil field investment would come very early.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Kemplin, you had a question, Mr. Carlson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carlson, there's been some talk here about this concept of a circuit breaker for volume of oil. And I was wondering if we could kind of extend that concept a little bit and to price. I know there's a lot of uncertainty, in the energy markets and the in the Middle East, particularly with Iraq. You never can tell what's going to happen there within this 10-year time horizon. that we're looking at in this proposed legislation. You know, there could be, you know, another war, there could be terrorism act that disrupt the flow of energy, and that the prices for oil could make a significant jump. Would it be appropriate to have a similar type of circuit breaker for price as we've discussed here for volume?
I think the administration of a price cap would be extremely difficult. The other issue, and I believe it was Kevin Tabor that mentioned it, is when you sit down to make your decision on whether or not you're going to spend another $50 million to bring Redoubt Shoal to the marketplace, you're going to build in some price strategy. And granted, these fields have been there for 30 years, and there's been some real high oil and gas prices, and primarily oil prices during that time frame. Realistically, I don't know if price is going to have a big is going to play a big role in making a decision to make further investment. I understand what you're saying, that if it was back to $20, $30, $40 a barrel, the state would like to have a share of that upside. But I think it would be very difficult at this point to build that into something that you could administer simply, and that's one of the things we liked about this bill. It's very simple,
mm-hmm.
and it took didn't take a lot of energy and time and effort to administer once it was in place. Sorry, I'm not giving you the feedback that you want, but I think it would be difficult to put a price cap and administer that.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I appreciate your testimony today, and we will now be calling on Ken Boyd.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ken Boyd, and I'm a director of the Division of Oil and Gas. Division's reviewed this bill in preparation for the hearing, and I hope you all have a copy of a letter that I sent to Senator Halford, the chairman of the Senate Resources Committee, where the companion bill was held last Friday. And I've sent a copy for the committee, and if you don't have it, I was hand-carried up here, but I know this happens with the packets, and I'll certainly try to get you a copy. But what the letter basically says is we don't have a position yet, but it was interesting to listen to the discussion this morning because very much like the committee, we have a lot of questions, and you've asked a lot of good questions today. And I'll go through a couple of the questions that I've raised in the letter very briefly. I know you're on a tight schedule, and I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here for other hearings, certainly. This question's already been asked in one form or another, but the bill has no provision to account for changing economic conditions. If the price of oil increases, the relief remains the same. In many hearings we've had, how do you protect the state's upside interest? And this question's already been asked, so I'm not going to belabor it. But there is no mechanism in the bill to protect the state's upside interest. There's no economic analysis that leads to the terms of the royalty reduction described in the bill. You know, why have these terms been picked? Why is it 5%? Why is it 10 years? Are the economic requirements of all the companies so similar that the same level of relief is needed for all of them? And the same thing goes, are all the fields so similar that the same level of relief is needed for all of them? If Redoubt is developed offshore and Strichkov is developed onshore, are the economics so substantially similar that you'd get the same relief for both? If you do, why? Under the provisions of HB 207, and Representative Roachberg has raised this question several times, Representative Roachberg and I spent a lot of quality time several years ago working on HB 207. Some other members of the committee around the table. These meetings actually were usually held 11 o'clock at night rather than 11 o'clock in the morning. If these fields need royalty relief to be economic, why can't they use 207? I will be the first person to tell you that HB 207 is probably not a perfect piece of legislation. It is a very difficult process, but it is the law. We have worked closely with UNICAL on their royalty modification application. It was difficult, it was amicable, and it's still on their desk. And again, it's not clear to us which fields will qualify for the royalty reduction. In Senate Resources, we were given a map of the six fields that the Senate sponsor believes the royalty applied to. I believe I could put other fields on that map. I don't know why it is just limited to those six fields. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to leave it at that. those are a few questions. You've asked a lot more. I think there's more questions to be answered. I'll be pleased to answer any questions today. I'll be here for future testimony and glad to help out any way that I can.
Do we have any questions of Mr. Boyd? Representative Roper, then Representative Kempa.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Boyd, I think for this bill to work, it's going to have input from the Division of Oil and Gas, affectionately known as DOG, and to make it a workable thing, because you have to be able to administer it. And just for starters, the discussions regarding some type of upside as it relates to, let's talk about further proven reserves. If there's expansion of the ability of a particular field that may have been granted a royalty reduction, how do you see that working as a practical matter and trying to simplify it? Is there a way that you could make a recommendation on that, or could you give us some help on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roker, if there is a way, I wouldn't do it in 5 minutes. And you know that these are the kind of things that take time and discussion, but certainly I think it's worth discussing. If I had that magic bullet 3 years ago, I wouldn't be as gray. And, you know, we'd all be a lot happier today. But I think it's something that bears discussion. The chairman has indicated that he has some other ideas about the bill. I think they should be developed through discussion, not me just making something up on the spot. But I certainly will work on that with you.
Representative Roper, please continue.
But yeah, that would be helpful if you could give it some additional thought. I think the committee would be in. We've had testimony, Mr. Boyd, this morning that it would be very difficult to have some kind of a pricing mechanism in that equation. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about volume and price as constituent elements of some kind of a matrix here. Do you think that would be difficult to have a pricing? Wouldn't that be simpler?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roper, we've certainly used sliding scale mechanisms in other fields. North Star, we've used it in Colville on some of our leases, you may recall. We have sliding scale royalties that vary with price over time.
And with, Mr. Chairman, that price being the major element of the formulation, or are there other constituent elements of the formula?
I think it's price, the producer price index. Mr. Chairman, I don't want to go too far the record with this, but it is, yes. Price is clearly a major impact part, yes.
Maybe you could provide the committee with an example of that you've done so we'd understand that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to do that.
And then, Mr. Chairman, let's see here. I'll pass right now. I think I got a couple other things wrong.
Thank you, Representative Roper. Representative Kemplin, you had a quick question.
Just a quick follow-up here to Representative Roper's inquiry into the price component here and on the upside. Just was curious, you know, there was been mentioned that the having some sort of a circuit breaker on price would be complex to administer. Is there a way to do it that is fairly simple to administer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kemplin, again, I hesitate to recommend a methodology today. I believe there are probably ways to tie price to relief. I mean, it's one of those things you develop through discussion. I mean, if oil is $10 a barrel, your royalty is X. If your price of oil is 12, it's X plus Y. Mm-hmm. You have a sliding scale. It slides from a low side to an upside to a number that, generally speaking, there's, you know, it stays the same on both extreme ends. Maybe the royalty goes up to 18% at some dollar per barrel value, and maybe it's capped down to the lower end, and it doesn't get any lower, so you have sort of ears on each end of the, mm-hmm. of the sliding scale.
I'd like to recognize that Representative Barnes and Representative Martin have joined us. Any further questions? Very quickly, if you could, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, the first one, this is limited to the Cook Inlet Sedimentary Basin. Is that a difficult thing to define geologically, or are you comfortable with that definition?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roper, one suggestion, I suppose, could be that you would use the definitions in exploration licensing. There is a definition there of the Cook Inlet Basin. It may go a little farther north than you want to go. Again, I can provide you with what that is. I mean, one of the interesting discussions this morning was about the Pioneer unit that's just, I think it's just finished public comment, and it's a coal bed methane unit, the first in Alaska. Some of you around this table approved the state to drill a coal bed methane well some years ago. It was a very inexpensive, $150,000 was drilled in Wasilla, and that has now the companies have taken the lead, exactly what the state wanted. The state was going to provide a little bit of money, a little spark, and it worked. Dave Lappy, Lapp Resources, now it's, I think it's called Growth Inc., it's an Australian company, is drilling 3 coal bed methane wells today. They're trying to get some permission from the AOGCC to deepen the wells. They've already drilled 3 of them to 500 feet. Unical, more resource, is looking to build a coal bed methane unit up near Wasilla in that whole area. It's a huge unit. The question is, does this bill apply to that unit? Because, there was nothing in there about that. Should we approve that? It's a question. How much gas will be provided there for the future? What is the future of coal bed methane in Alaska? I'm asking questions that I do not know the answer to.
Mr. Chairman, to follow up on that. And
please do, Representative Rogan.
And Representative Rogan, I was pleased to punch you about the thermos gas. Anyway, I guess my second question, and I have a final after that, Mr. Chairman, is that why couldn't we put Catala on here?
You'd have to stretch the Cook-Inlet Basin a fair distance.
That's why. That's the other thing. We might think about it. I've got that pass right now. But I guess my final question for today, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Boyd, is that does the administration have a position on this bill? And if not, or in the alternative, would the administration and or yourself personally rather see a fix to 207 than a bill like this?
Mr. Chairman, the administration does not have a position on the bill until some of the questions we have been answered. And I can't answer completely on the second part, but I believe the answer was we would be willing to fix 207 because we believe 207 is difficult also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. For the questions, I would like to shift gears. We will be moving, House Bill 380 will be held over until next week when we will have to be taking further testimony, maybe coming up with a CS or some amendments to some of the things that we've discussed. Mr. Boyd, before you leave, you mentioned that there was a list. You had an additional list of other fields that might be on that. Can you apply that to the committee at your convenience?
I have, again, it depends a little bit, as John Meese asked, what's undeveloped means.
Sure.
You really need the definition to answer the question, but, I mean, I would, right off the bat, I'd say the Pioneer unit and the new discovery.
If you can just get us a list of that. Thank you. At this time, we'll move on to House Bill 393, the gas line bill, or as the short title reads, Develop Stranded Gas Resources. I have invited many of my colleagues to come forward with concerns or suggestions, and at this time I'd like to call on Representative Martin. I believe that you wish to testify on this morning. And seeing what Mr. Martin, or Representative Martin, has on his list, this will be very revealing, I'm sure. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It must be... I'm most honored. It's the first time in 20 years I've ever been invited to a committee to give testimony. Mr. Chairman, as you know, when you and I were appearing on a television show last week, I did express concerns, and I did express concerns last year about this issue. Now, some of the concerns have changed considerably since the governor did the new bill, but I'm going to go back to last year's history where the legislature did pursue the issue of when and where and how will we finance and get a gas pipeline in the arena for which would benefit Alaska. And as you know, last year I was the only one that voted against the bill that initiated this, and my major concerns were that we at the legislature in hopes and wishes gave too much up to the executive branch. And I wanted to leave this with you, reminding everyone of Title IX, that only we, the legislature, have the powers of taxation, and it shall never be surrendered, is what it says in the Constitution. This power should not be suspended or contracted away those are interesting terms too, except as provided under this article. And I felt that from the initiative that we did pass last year, 250, that we literally gave everything to the governor to do in hopes and feeling that, boy, that's it, we'll leave it up to the governor. But when we put in that same bill a confidentiality clause and the clause of closed meetings, it really worried me. And so the governor and executive branch could make up almost any deal they wanted, and it would be confidential. Since that time in the new bill, some of that had been adjusted so that it says we may go back to the legislature, or we may request legislative confirmation of the deal, whatever it may be, and that's good. It's just a matter of how we go about it. Also, last year, my major fear was is that we as legislators should not force the economy one way or the other. We've had too many bad experiences in this state of saying, well, if private industry can do it this good, imagine what the government body could do. And I just point out the dairy industry, we literally wiped it out. It used to have 5 creameries in this state. And then somebody got the great idea, well, look how the dairy industry is doing. Imagine what we can do if we put more government money in it. We destroyed it. Agriculture industry, same way. We literally destroyed it after giving hundreds of thousands of acres of land out. We can't even sell our hay and barley. We buy it for ourselves. So those are just two small incidents that say, well, maybe we should keep our nose out of oil and gas and let the market work. I think also, to get it off my chest before I get into details of the bill, is that we should not threaten the industry. That, by golly, you're going to do it our way or we can tax you. Or if you don't do it our way, we're going to hold your nose to the grindstone for some other way. Let the free market work and help the industry and get out of its way. That's the most important thing in helping. So I hope that when we work with industry, when we work with the financial people, whoever it may be, foreign countries, see how we can help them, not hinder them and not threaten. Now, we as legislators should look at what are we doing now with the gas. I think one of the most beautiful things we're doing with the gas right now is recycling. And this is no genius of the legislature. This is the heart and soul of private industry working. They've been willing to put millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into new modern technology. And by recycling the gas, we are producing more oil. And so far, they estimate that because of recycling the gas and putting in oil, there's probably been an additional $2 billion barrels received in excess oil. And if they continue this, they will be able to have another $2 billion in what we originally estimated would be the reserve. That's money in hand. That's money that you can count and we count every day coming down the pipeline. If we force before it's time, like good wine, if you force it, it will decrease in value, the pipeline and the oil. Once you stop taking gas out, injecting it, and sending it in liquefied way or just gas itself down a pipeline, you have depleted your oil reserves. That is not in the governor's bill. That is not estimated from what I see now. When we do that, how much will we cost ourselves in not only severance? We're in the bill, we're only talking about giving up severance tax, but we absolutely will be giving up royalty of oils once you decrease the injection of gas. So we need to listen to the industry. We need to ask them, when's the proper time? And they can tell us. They know when too much water is coming through, too much gas is coming through, and there's not enough oil, then shut those wells off. And eventually, when there's enough of wells shut off, then you know the only thing we're going to get out of there now is the gas we recycled. So it is very valuable now. And when will you shut it off? And what will it cost it? That's not been analyzed. The incentive programs we have is a replacement, and some of the terminology that we use in the bill should make the industry or whoever we expect to participate run like mad. And Section 3 is a good one some of the terms we use there. Here we go. Here. We're talking about, the intent, section two. These are kind of catch-all words that you want to, good golly, how much is that going to cost? The legislators further intend, however, that any fiscal term agreed in the contract under the Act in lieu of other taxes will fully and fairly compensate the people of the state of Alaska for severance, production, and sale of natural resources belonging to the people. Then we also, the value of infrastructure that is provided by the state will be paid for to the project, including all the advantages of civilized society that may be provided by the state to the sponsors of the projects. Now, what does this mean? Well, we had built, you know, here's a good group of 10,000 people that came in. We had built new schools. We had built churches. We had to build roads. We had to give them water, and we had to give them dividend checks and everything else. That clause there, if I was in anyone investing in the state, I'd run real quick until that is out. When you talk about investors and everybody thinks it's such a great deal, why shouldn't the state put the permanent fund in there and we can own that whole pipeline? No, we'd lose our pants, because it's estimated that the most you're going to get out of that is maybe 1 or 2 or 3% at the most in what you invested. In my mind, anyone's a fool with today's market as it is today. So I think we've got to find other ways. And that's even with the incentive of local taxes and state taxes taken out, and even some of the federal taxes. But when you have to pay all those back at the back end, it's not worth it. Most important, and I haven't dealt with that much in private industry, it's just that I believe in free enterprise. And before you make something and invent something, it might be nice to find out you have a market. And if you have a market, why don't those people invest? So if we're going to try to get Taiwan or Japan or whoever it may be to buy our gas, maybe if they invest, if they have an equity in the pipeline, we can be assured that they're going to uphold the contract. Otherwise, say, well, you build it, let us know, and we'll let you know in 5 years or 10 years if we will take some of your gas. But to make this thing valuable, some of the reports that we've received already, we're going to be asking for almost 14 million metric tons to place on the market almost immediately. That's a tremendous amount of gas, which means prices are going to drop all over the world. And so I don't know if that's been taken into the formula or not. Virtually, we're almost willing to give away our gas right now just to get a few jobs. And it sounds good. We're going to put Alaskans to work. But what is an Alaskan? A Alaska hire only. We guarantee it. Well, guys come up here for 30 days ahead of time, a year ahead of time. We got 19 laws that say what is an Alaskan residence, depending if you want to fish, if you want dividend checks, if you got to go to court. What are 19 different laws? Which one you're going to choose makes an Alaskan residence? And I'm afraid if this project's not done right, it'll be like the pipeline, where you're going to have a flood of people who really need work all around the nation, all over the world, and they're going to be flooding into Alaska a year ahead of time because they think, hey, it's right there. And all I need is a residence requirement of 30 days or 6 months or a year. And I can live on the welfare system for that long. When I hear what Alaska gives you for not working, man, I love it up there. So we will have an influx, even like we did with the original pipeline, which was a solid financial deal. We knew the world and Alaska needed oil, and it was there for it. But this time here, we don't know when the market would open for us, and we may be flooded by a tremendous amount of new residents looking for a job, and we're going to pay dearly for that. So I hope that when this bill does go through and encourages the industry to look at us, that we make sure we tell people it's a long way coming. Don't come up today. Don't come up next year. And the training aspect you have here worries me. You said, well, we're going to make sure they train Alaskans. We don't have 5,000 welders that are the top quality that you need in the world.
And just because you gave them a six-month course to a year course in welding, I don't want them on a pipeline. I don't even want them on your water line in your house, because it takes a lot of experience to be the best in the world, and we're not going to get that. And if we contract with the unions, which would be a union hire, there's no doubt about this, then what are they going to do? They're going to establish the criteria, whether it be a green card, we used to call it, or an A card, or a B card, or whatever, and this allows them to bring up the members from the fraternal unions and bring them in at the Alaskan, too. But that's where we get the quality. That's the only way you're going to get top quality in this nation to work on a tremendous job like this that need the best in the world. So I think to put up this flag on Alaska Hire and then Alaska Only is not right. It's misleading. We're going to need a crew of 10,000 people for 3 or 4 years. And then after that, what will you do? So it's a lot of concerns I have, and I hope we address them with an open forum and not one where we're going to threaten the oil companies or threaten whoever. You know, $15 billion, you want to be nice to these people who are going to invest in this. And then we don't want to tell them, by golly, you're the one that built that pipeline, and we want every cent out of you we can. And, you know, it's the wrong way to approach it. I'd be surprised if you have much profit in this. And if there's not much profit, the governor in his article said here, an Alaska citizen will share in the profits. I'd rather keep all of our money in the permanent funds. If there's that much profit to be made, use your dividend money, and then we have the whole thing. But let's face reality. Are we doing this temporarily because of an election coming up? Are we doing just to tell people we got jobs coming on the line? Or should we do another avenue of more revenues? More revenues is the last thing that I think we need to worry about. We got billions that we're putting away, and hopefully we continue putting hundreds of millions away. But if we want jobs, then you have to look at long-standing jobs, not something that's just going to be 3 years or 4 years at the outmost. They said it would be approximately 10,000 jobs for about 3 years, and then we need about 600 people to run the gas line. So what are you going to do with all those people that suddenly go out? And they bring family, that 10,000 workers. So I know there's others that want to speak, and Representative Barnes is writing all kinds of nice notes there. But, and last, let's not have this here. Remember the bumper sticker? Happiness is 10,000 Texans taking out Okies under their arms. You know, this is what we're going to end up with. And let's do it right if we're going to do it at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Martin. For the committee's knowledge, I had invited Representative Martin to come down when I found out his concerns to the House Bill 393. In fact, I told him that if he did not come down, we would convene this committee in his office to get his concerns.
Well, your offer was better than that. It wasn't like
well, translation, that was basically. Anyway, I would like to, Representative Barnes, if you would like to...
I'd just like to make a statement because, you know, every time somebody decides to interject my name, then I feel I have to qualify what it is that they've interjected. And he said I was writing nice notes, and if he read what I was writing about what he said, he wouldn't think they were nice.
Well, I knew you wanted to talk. Yeah.
Again, with the spirit of the... getting some of the concerns out of some of the representatives, the colleagues, as I've mentioned many times on the floor. Representative Barnes, did you have any?
Mr. Chairman, I have no intention of taking up this committee's time with my comments at this time. I'm simply here to hear what is going on with your process. I do have some concerns about this bill. I've shared those with you. I think that's the proper place. I've shared it with all of the all folks that care to listen, and one of the big concerns that I have with this bill is, number one, they call it the stranded gas legislation instead of the gas pipeline legislation, and if we're talking about gas to liquids, I don't think it should be in this bill. That's a whole different taxing regime using the gas line that exists today. I think that's a section that needs to be fixed, because you would not need to give the same sort of taxing regime for using the pipeline that exists versus building a new one. In addition to that, I think the socioeconomic aspect of this bill needs to come out of here. They keep trying to put that into each piece of legislation that comes along. And there's another section dealing with local governments that I think needs quite a bit of work.
Thank you, Representative Barnes.
You're welcome.
With that, I would like to invite any individuals to come up and make a comment on House Bill 3.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, there is one other section.
Representative Barnes, please.
Let me just bring this to your attention. There is a section in here dealing with the commissioners going before budget and audit and laying their plan before them, and if they should agree with it, then they would have some full legislative hearings. I object to that. Any plan needs to come before the whole legislature, not budget and audit. I don't think they have the power to speak for me.
Thank you, Representative Barnes. Any other comments from the committee before I open up to public testimony? On the list, we have Pam LeBeau, if you'd like to come forward. Talk about 393.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pam LeBeau, and I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And in no way do I consider myself to have the degree of expertise that I could speak to any of the details of the bill. My testimony is one of support for the concept of bringing the stranded natural gas into production. And specifically, our resolution on the subject urges the legislature and the administration to continue to take those steps, particularly to provide a stable and appropriate fiscal and regulatory environment, which will give an Alaska stranded gas project the best opportunity to become commercially viable, thus enabling the earliest possible development of the resource. And that is my comment.
Thank you, Ms. LeBeau. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Do we have anybody on teleconference that wishes to speak on House Bill 393? Apparently we don't, so. Any comments from committee members? We do have a caucus at noon. So if we, Representative Ryan?
Mr. Chairman, we've asked an awful lot of questions, for which there were answers weren't forthcoming because of various considerations. There was no conceptual engineering done. Nobody knows what the market is, who the investors may be. We have to have all these terms before we can. We've heard testimony that the market's not there, and yet we have evidence from the Oil and Gas Journal that there is a potential 100% market, which should make things a lot easier. I think this committee really needs to, in my own mind, before I get on board this bill fully behind it, is to have some of these basic fundamental questions answered. What is the market? For sure, but we know where we're going. What, if that market is there, has there been any intention, as Representative Martin said, for any of the people who may be purchasers of this gas to take an equity position in it? Some of the aspects of the bill is presented by the administration of the commissioners qualifying who the people would be. You know, I brought this up the other day, that language is extremely open, ambiguous, subject to anybody's interpretation. I just need to know that I'm operating a little more sound financial basis. We're talking about right now, as we've heard testimony, nobody's really drilled for gas. We've drilled for oil. Gas has been a secondary discovery. But we've had Phillips come in and talk about Point Thompson and tremendous amounts of gas. We've heard about high-pressure wells that seem to be out of anybody's ability to control. What happens when we go up on that reservoir and start looking for gas? How long, how many hundreds of years will there be a gas supply there? What are geological predictions? I mean, just on and on with all kinds of questions that are very important for this project. if we give the concessions that are gotten in here, and later on down the road, 20 or 30 years, great vast amounts of gas are discovered. Are the terms of this bill going to apply to that? If the market increases more than 100%, it goes 150 or 200, makes a very favorable market with very high prices, are these terms of this bill still going to apply? It's a very open-ended product the way it is right now. And to buy off on this without some firm answers makes me very uncomfortable because, as I've stated in this committee before, I have a fiduciary responsibility to the people of the state, and I want to exercise it. I want to make a deal, and I want